we better pick up our first passenger here from Queen's, and that is from Plant Sciences, Beverly Glover. Welcome, Beverly.
Hi, Chris.
Now, I'm sorry, I know I promised you a ride down the River Cam, a boat ride or a cruise or something, and this is the best we could do. It's a low-budget show.
It's all right, we're quite used to it in Cambridge.
Now, you're from Plant Sciences. What are you devoting most of your time to at the moment?
Well, most of our work at the moment is about the surface of the flower, particularly the surface of the petals, and how different structures on those surfaces affect the way the flower interacts with the animals that collect its pollen and pollinate it.
So how do flowers actually work?
Well, a flower is basically a bright advertising thing that says to animals, there's something good to eat over here. The animal comes along looking for the reward, the good thing to eat, which is usually nectar, and in doing so picks up a bit of the plant's pollen and transfers it then to another flower, and that way the plants get fertilised and make seed.
But what about in terms of how the flower mechanically works? And if you zoom in with a microscope and look at it in more detail, what's actually there?
Well, different flowers have different surface structures depending on what they're trying to attract. So different animals have different preferences. And so one thing we've been looking at is whether some flowers have cell structures that give grip to animals, so that if they're trying to land perhaps in high wind or at difficult angles, they have something to get a grip on. Another thing we've been looking at is much smaller surface structures on the nanometer scale, which affect the way light's reflected and refracted and can give you iridescence on the flower.
So this will presumably mean that different animals or different insects can differentially see the flower, and it's therefore more attractive to certain species than others.
Yes, exactly. So one thing that plants can do with structure is make sure they reflect very highly in the ultraviolet end of the spectrum, which we can't see, but many insects can, and so that makes the flower look much brighter to an insect than it would to us and makes it very attractive to them.
Why do you think insects want to see in the UV? Where do they get that trait from?
Not all insects have the same colour vision, but bees, which is what we mostly work with, have three photoreceptors like we do, but whereas we see the primary colours, they see ultraviolet, blue and green, and so the world looks very different to them, and flowers are adapted to how they want to look, not how we want them to look.
Is it anything to do with the fact that on a cloudy day, UV can still come through and other light wavelengths may not?
It may well be. There is quite a lot of evidence that pollinator colour vision, or bee colour vision at least, evolved before flowers evolved. And so it's as if the flowers have had to suit their colours to what the animals already had. It's not the other way around. The animals weren't going, oh, OK, flowers are red, so I need to see red. They started off with colour vision that worked for them, and then flowers have adapted to suit.
So why would they need colour vision if there was no flower around for them to pollinate?
Well, that's a good question. One possibility, of course, is to see one another. So a lot of insects are shiny in the ultraviolet or iridescent, and that helps them attract mates or select mates or identify enemies and so on. So colour vision is important for seeing one another too.
But going back to the petals for a second, so those cells you're looking at that give grip, is that just all they do, that they're sort of sticky to certain insects, or do they have other jobs?
No, that's not all they do, so I wish it was that simple. They also change the way the flower looks because they act as little lenses that focus light into the flower and make it look brighter, so we can see that effect. And animals can see it too, insects can see it too, but it may not be very important to them. So they can see it, but they don't really care. They may also make the flower warmer by trapping heat. So when they trap light, they trap energy, and so they make the flower slightly warmer. And that, to some pollinators in some environments, may be the most significant factor. A warmer flower means that you don't have to spend as much energy warming yourself up to be able to fly.
Because you had a paper in Nature actually exploring that, didn't you, a couple of years ago?
Yes, that's right. We showed that even a perfectly normal bumblebee at ambient temperature would prefer a warmer flower to a cooler one, given a choice, if the reward's the same in both. I think the difference these cells can make to how warm the flower is isn't very great for a flower on a sunny day in a normal habitat. But to pollinators that are foraging perhaps at dawn when the flowers are still quite cold, they might make enough of a difference to be significant.
Why does it make a difference? Why does an insect want to drink warm nectar?
Because it doesn't have to spend any energy warming it up itself. So bees have to spend some energy warming their bodies up just to be able to fly. If it's like you having a hot drink, if the nectar comes in warmer, then you don't have to spend as much energy warming it up.
And do all plants have these cells, or is it just the sort of preserve of ones that want to specifically attract certain insects?
About 80% of flowering plants have these cells, and we think that some are doing it for tactile reasons, to give the animal a grip, some are doing it for warmth reasons, some might be doing it because of the effect it has on how the flower looks. It seems to be an ancestral trait, so flowers seem to have had it from when there were first flowers, and the plants that don't have it seem to have lost it, and that's actually something that we're quite interested in, is exploring those plants and why they've lost something that seems to be so useful.
And plants that don't rely on insects to get pollinated, do they not have them?
Well, most wind-pollinated plants have lost petals entirely, so they don't have these structures which are only on the petals.
And sort of looking beyond that, where do you think this is going to go next? Because there must presumably be mutant flowers that don't have these cells, and are they less fit? Do they grow less well?
Yes, so we have a mutant line of snapdragon, Antirrhinum majus, and also a mutant line of petunia that don't make these cells. And although they're perfectly fit and grow perfectly well in the greenhouse, if we plant them out in the field, we find that they don't set as much seed, they don't get pollinated as well, they're not as attractive to bees. So those mutants have let us identify the genes that control this process, and we can start to understand then in the plants that have deliberately, in inverted commas, lost them, the flowers that never have them, what's happened to those genes and where they've gone and why they're not working anymore.
So does this mean that if you gave plants more genes or expressed them more, so they made more of these cells, you could make them more fertile, more fit, and you'd get better yields off of them?
It would depend on the plant, but that's certainly something we're thinking about. So, for instance, a lot of members of the tomato family have lost these cells because the way the flower is pollinated, the animals that are attracted to it don't need them, either for grip or for the vision. But tomato itself hasn't lost them. So one thing we're interested in exploring at the moment is if we knock those genes out in tomato, can we make it actually more attractive to pollinators and set more fruit?
Because they're buzz pollinators, aren't they? In Australia, they have to import bumblebees that can buzz at the right frequency to make the pollen come out.
Yeah, exactly. So they're actually attracted to the anthers, the bright yellow things that produce the pollen. That's what they're trying to collect, pollen to feed to their larvae, not nectar out of petals. So the petals, if you like, have become irrelevant, and so we think that for most buzz-pollinated species, these cells have been lost because you're not trying to make the petals stand out. But tomato, for some reason, hasn't lost them, so that's something we'd like to explore.
And just lastly, Beverly, with a name like Beverly Glover, working on plant sciences, are you not, or have you never been tempted to add the word fox in the middle so you could be a plant scientist being called Beverly Fox Glover?
You know, it's funny, my husband makes that joke all the time as well.
Thank you very much, Beverly. Thank you for joining us on our punt today.
That's all right.
If you want to walk back to Queen's, it's that way down the bank.
Okay, perfect.
Beverly Glover from Plant Sciences at Cambridge University, talking about conical cells and how they can warm up plants and make the petals much more attractive to insects, and therefore they might want to pollinate them.
The Naked Scientist podcast, powered by UK Fast, the UK's best hosting provider, on the web at ukfast.net.